You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. Seek our place in the world and the answers to our heart's deep questions. As we seek, may our hearts be open to unexpected answers. May the light of our chalice remind us that this is a community of warmth, of wisdom, and the welcoming of multiple truths. Well, good morning and welcome to this service of worship. My name is Rob McPherson, the minister of this church, and I welcome you on behalf of generations of Unitarians who have worshiped in similar gatherings since 1854. A particular welcome to members of the Multifaith Association, Denise and Gunn, welcome today. Normally this would have been our annual multifaith service, but COVID makes things harder, as you know, but this service was prepared with them in mind. We are fortunate in South Australia to be able to have church services, and it's important we comply with our pandemic conditions, so I see you all nicely spaced. Jenny Deister is our COVID marshal today. For those of you that don't know Jenny, she's right there. If she gives you a direction, please comply. I would like to remind you, please make sure you've signed in. Members of the church don't need to leave contact details, but non-members do, and you can use the QR app outside. Though we have a strong sense in this church of social responsibility, as we're demonstrating with COVID, we're also a spiritual community that encourages all toward their own individual spiritual path in freedom and responsibility. And that is any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world for all. It's my very great pleasure to do something we haven't done in a little while because of the pandemic, and that is welcome a new member. We are very few genetic Unitarians in the room. Very few genetic Unitarians in the room. Really very few. Really nearly every membership here began one day when you were a first-time visitor, when you first came to us as an unknown guest, when you first took those tentative steps through that threshold, not knowing what to expect from us, nor we from you. You were a stranger whom we welcomed and served. And in a few moments, and with deep gladness, I'm going to welcome a new member formally on behalf of the congregation. Now, in true Unitarian fashion, this is a common sense, straightforward ceremony free of mysticism. There's no taking of oaths, no ritual scarring, no tattooing. Like today's little ceremony, becoming a member of this church is also really simple and straightforward. All that's required is to fill out a form, pay a small annual subscription, be here now, shake hands, or as we're going to do, bump elbows, and accept a much coveted enameled pin. You can't get these just anywhere. Just because something is simple doesn't mean there's nothing to understand. As a member, you cease to be a guest. And you become a fellow host. As a member, you cease to be a receiver of the church's mission and share in the responsibility for doing the church's mission. And what is that mission? Well, you are soaking in it at the moment. Radical hospitality. To offer a place at the table to all who come seeking to journey with us. To make them welcome. To get to know them and to be known by them. To try to understand and help them meet their spiritual needs as they're revealed over time. To offer them the sort of dignity and worth you'd want for yourself. We offer radical hospitality not because one God or another says we must or because we want money, but because we're all human beings, and offering that fellowship, that precious fellowship, is how we help each other make life not just bearable, but joyful and fulfilled and redeemed. Every person just about in this room was new once upon a time, and you were welcomed, and look at you. You are evidence of the fact the church exists not just for its members, like a club. It exists for the people out there we have not met yet. So I call upon you all to welcome this new member, no longer as a guest, but as a fellow host, your equal. This new member comes to the table bearing gifts, and we ask you as fellow hosts to share them along with us as we pledge to share ours with you. And together, let us offer loving kindness to a world so in need. So I invite our new member to come forward, Miranda. Receive this much coveted pin. Will the congregation rise in body or in spirit? Miranda, with deep gladness, we welcome you as a member of this congregation. We do not ask you to abandon anything in your past or surrender any conviction forged by your experience as a price of our fellowship. We ask only your willingness to share with us the richness of your life as we will share ours with you. Miranda, if you agree to do so, say, I will. Will you, present members of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, welcome this new member to the life and work of this church and support her as a member of this community? If you will, say, we will.
We will.
On behalf of the church, you're welcome to have that pin. You are no longer a guest. You are a member of this church, so you are this church. Welcome to you with all our hearts. Thank you, Margaret. It's our tradition to share the significant events of our spiritual lives in fellowship, as we are now. I invite you now to deepen and bind our fellowship and covenant with each other by sharing with us any recent event that's been significant in your spiritual journey, like these, I suggest. And mark that sharing by lighting a candle from our chalice. There is no mic, so you'll need to use your outdoor voice. But you're also very welcome to light a candle in silence if you have nothing to say about it. If you choose to remain still, you can still take part in widening the circle of compassion by listening with an open heart and mind and by refraining from comment. I open our worship space for this sacred act that draws us together in our shared humanity. We'll let that stand for all the things that remain silent in our hearts today. May all of the things that we have shared be honored by this beloved community. Kids in about year 4 are in a developmental sweet spot. They have a newly developed capacity for abstract thought, and many find the freedom afforded by abstract thinking, frankly, intoxicating. So there's a concrete thought, there's an abstract thought. And finding connections and patterns in such airy things as thoughts is a kind of mental buzz for them at that age. And best of all, they're still a couple years away from having all that fresh, free, abstract thinking capability clouded and mixed up with a cocktail of adolescent hormones. Even those few that come preloaded with some abstract thoughts about religion, usually it's my Muslim and Sikh students and a very few conservative Christian sects, are already, by that age, entertaining, I wouldn't say doubts necessarily, but the sense that there are other people in the world with thoughts about spirituality and religion that are very different, and they don't see that as any sort of problem. This year, their teachers decided to do a unit of investigation called Differences in Spiritual Beliefs. This got the kids talking about the habits and practices of their own upbringing, and also got them to investigate others that they weren't familiar with. So this is good. The aim is to acknowledge diversity, that there are lots of ways of being religious or spiritual. And recognizing diversity and knowing something about diverse beliefs promotes a broad tolerance. This is good. But merely observing that there are differences doesn't abstract any meaning from those differences, or from the fact that religions make radically conflicting claims about the big issues of life, where we come from, where we're headed, how we should live. Besides, as most of these kids have no pre-programmed formal religion anyway, seeing there are differences between religions doesn't tell us whether religious beliefs are things worth considering at all. And if they are, why are they? So the more valuable question, to me at least, is not which or how many of these different belief systems can we know about. The more interesting question for me for them is, how do these many different beliefs relate to each other and to the world as we know it? What is the overall coherence of this, in short? For years now, there's been this patently false binary floating around that modern secularism has led to a decline in religion, that secularism and religion is an either-or proposition. You're either secular or you're religious. But overall, taking a broader view, the world today is just as religious as it ever was, with the glaring exception of certain places and demographics, specifically the Western European intelligentsia, that is, people broadly like us or who would like to think of themselves like that. We live in both a secular and a pluralistic age, where the secular and the religious are not mutually exclusive, but are kind of mixed up together. Secularity and religion are complementary after all. Many religions do coexist in the same secular society, and this is not new. Pluralism was the norm, for example, along the Silk Road that linked Europe and China. This was about 2,000 years worth of peaceful secular pluralist coexistence. Pluralism was the norm in the Convivencia in Spain, and in Paul's accounts of his first century Athens. It's a vivid picture of pluralism, in fact, in St. Paul that provided fertile ground for the development of his little product called Christianity. Second, secular language coexists with religious language. We can and do cope with reality in both secular and religious terms and find ways of applying them in different areas of our lives. Secularism is, in fact, the shared vocabulary in a pluralist faith context. A hospital, for example, is an institution that operates in a way that is not purely secular, but is in fact pluralistic. And this reading by Emeritus Professor of Theology Peter Berger puts this both-and situation rather well. Thanks, Minnie.
So visualize a surgeon preparing for an operation. She exchanges her long white coat for the typically green cap and scrubs of the operating room. In the same motion, she squeezes her mind into the narrow frame of a rigorously secular discourse. If she believes in or practices her religion, this has become strictly irrelevant for the duration of the surgery. She may be a Christian, a Jew, a Buddhist, it doesn't matter. Indeed, it must not matter for the next hour or so. She cannot, for example, stop in the middle of the operation and try to remember the Talmudic passage that might apply. If she did, and this shift of attention showed up in the result of the surgery, even her most ultra-orthodox patient would sue her. Does this mean the surgeon's Judaism is insincere? Not at all. She may even think of her practice of medicine as her part of the repair of the universe, tikkun olam, to which all observant Jews are called. But for this 1 hour, she must behave as if God were not given. In most of the world, the hospital is not at war with religion, but rather the locale of peaceful interaction between its secular discourse and religious beliefs and practices. This occurs both on the formal, professional level and on the level of ordinary people in contact with the hospital.
I thought it'd be good to have a doctor read that. So, I begin moving the year force from the simple observation that there are differences, which is not really higher level thinking, toward the value of pluralism with an old theater game I learned back in the Stone Age. The only rule of this game is they cannot speak during it. I produce an invisible item from thin air. I bounce it. I pick one of them and toss it to them. And I gesture for them to do likewise. And it goes around the room like that. The invisible item changes in every way imaginable. Its size changes. Its shape changes. Its weight changes. Its heft changes. Its speed of delivery changes. It becomes variously a volleyball, a soccer ball, a cricket ball, a beach ball, a huge airy balloon, a bowling ball, a medicine ball, and a marble. Some accept what's given to them more or less as offered. Some change it without paying much attention to what they're doing. Others take it and intentionally change it. My gang. Some are freaked out by the absence of rules and don't know what to do with it. Others are liberated by the openness and get creative and thus a bit possessive of the nature that they give it. So they'll like pitch a cricket ball and someone will make to take a tennis swing and they'll go, it's a cricket ball. Some don't like being put on the spot and cannot wait to pass it off any old way. Others love the performativity. There are as many responses to this mystery item as there are people. I ask them, so was something there? The consensus is both yes and no. I ask them if there were differences. Oh, yes, they say many. I ask them which was the right way to handle it. They say there is no one right answer. I ask them to relate this to differences in spiritual beliefs, the subject of their inquiry, and, you know, they get it. The big questions of life, where we come from, where we're headed, what it all means, have many answers, but the mystery at the center remains the same. I ask them why they think people with different spiritual beliefs have fought so much, so hard, for so long over something so uncertain. They mention things like people's investment in the questions, the people's desire to be right, and who has power. I remind them of the ism of pluralism, that it's not just that there are differences, but that we wish to promote the notion, that's the ism, that differences are more than okay, but pretty cool and normal, in fact. What would light be without the spectrum of color? What would people be if we were all exactly the same? What sort of ice cream store offers only one flavor? Religious pluralism, coexistent with secularism, is the way things are. And all that remains for us is how to make peace among the differences. Pluralism is not no faith. Pluralism is not bad faith. Pluralism is, in fact, good for faith. For us, as a Unitarian Church, we should seriously consider embracing the language and discourse of pluralism, because we are not merely an atheist church. We are not merely an agnostic church. We are not a lapsed Christian church, nor a church of westernized Buddhists who don't want to be told that the Eightfold Path prohibits alcohol and caffeine, which it does. Pluralism is, in fact, good for faith for several reasons. First, pluralism makes it harder to take religious tradition or beliefs for granted. It introduces a necessary element of uncertainty and therefore a certain degree of humble reservation that one may not possess all the answers. That seems to me very mature, a sense of contingency about what you trust. Second, pluralism is good faith because it is freeing. And because one is free within it to assemble a personal faith as you would with Legos, free to resist the pressure of social conformity, there is an essential human dignity offered by pluralism. If, as a free person, you cast in your lot with truths that pluralism makes uncertain, that's a more mature, self-aware faith. This, by the way, is why religious freedom is so vital in a free society. Third, if you promote pluralism in a free society, all religious institutions become voluntary associations, thus fully intentional communities. In this context, it's the laity, not the power of the clergy, that gains power. in this dignified exercise of free will. As any act of free will, any religious affiliation gains vitality in a competitive landscape. You know, we're taught to value competition in the free market, but not in matters of value. The contest of ideas competing on their own merit rather than coming to you with social and psychological pressure strengthens the democratic principle at the heart of our Unitarian polity. Fourth, and finally, pluralism makes us distinguish between the core of one's faith and the more peripheral elements. It helps us decide what's non-negotiable and what can be a matter of, maybe, live and let live. If I've freely chosen a faith tradition over others, I can more freely decide what's at stake in my choice and what is less decisively important. But of course, I don't tell the year for us these reasons because I wasn't selling pluralism. You know why? Because pluralism sells itself to them. Live and let live. Walk your own path. Respect the path of others. Who really knows the answers to life's big questions beyond the shadow of any doubt, and thus willing to insist that you see it that way too? Yeah, but as I say, these kids are in a sweet spot. The frantic tribalisms come later. Power and privilege and who gets to have them determine whose stories get told and how and which do not. That all comes later. For now, to stick it in their memory, I share a song with them. And I want you to see the words because I think this should be a hymn. Everybody's wondering what and where they all came from. It's a little country. Everybody's worrying about where they're gonna go when the whole thing's done. But no one knows for certain, so it's all the same to me. Think I'll just let the mystery be. Some say once you're gone forever. Some say you're gonna come back. Some say you rest in the arms of the Savior if the sinful ways you lack. Some say they're coming back in a garden, bunch of carrots and a little sweet pea. I'll just let the mystery be. Everybody's wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody's worried about where they're gonna go when the whole thing's done. But no one knows for certain, and it's all the same to me. Think I'll just let the mystery be. Some say they're going to a place called glory. I ain't saying that ain't a fact. But I've heard I'm on the road to purgatory, and I don't like the sound of that. But I believe in love, and I live my life accordingly. And I choose to let the mystery be. Everybody's wondering what and where they all came from. Everybody's worrying about where they're gonna go when the whole thing's done. But no one knows for certain, so it's all the same to me. I'll just let the mystery be. Think I'll just let the mystery be. So that's the song. And that's Iris DeMent, for those of you with Spotify. It should really be a Unitarian hymn. The story of the blind man that we started with is one of my all-time favorites, but it is a deeply flawed story. On a number of levels. Inevitably, we hearers identify with the narrator who knows it's an elephant and sees the error. In fact, we are each of us more like the blind men, not able to see what's beyond our scope. The song is pretty much the same. We stand outside people's beliefs, but I still kind of like it. Or if you prefer your theological pluralism a little pithier, how's this to conclude with? There are many paths up the mountain. The only person who gets lost is the one running around telling the others they're on the wrong path. Don't be that person is the whole of the lesson. Amen. Before we were Unitarian, Christian, Jew, Muslim, Buddhist, Baha'i, or Hindu, before we were Australian, Swedish, Dutch, Iranian, French, or American, before we were Mr. or Mrs., or doctor, or minister, or OA, or AM, or OAM. We were all human beings, born from the infinite and the eternal. May we go forth with loving kindness in our hearts toward the great rainbow of faiths in this community. And as Lincoln put it, whatever you are, be a good one. Amen.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.